Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to Madrid, and we're playing...
Bernabeu?
Yeah, we're playing at Real Madrid's, right?
Yeah,
have they finished that big renovation?
Pretty sure.
That stadium's huge.
That seems massive. I think they're playing it.
That was the other thing I just realized. I'm just so over the games. Like, just get them over with. Okay, let's take a quick break because we haven't gotten to the Grizzlies, haven't gotten to the Tigers. So let's do that. We'll also get into, I'm going to need a new football coach. So George is going to talk me through some of the candidates. We'll lay out what's going to happen.
There's only one.
Yeah, there is only one. He's in Chapel Hill right now.
Yes.
Come on home, Bill. Let's take a quick break.
I was talking about Jordan. She should.
Jordan. Yeah, of course. Mrs. Coach or Ms. Coach. I don't know how we. Titles don't matter. We'll take a break. We'll get into the list next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. CJ Harris is going to join us during the next segment, but before we do that, let's get into the list. The Memphis Grizzlies. All right, guys. I think my overreaction for the weekend from the Memphis Grizzlies was it was nice to just kind of get back to a regular NBA weekend in which the Grizzlies played a team. They came in as favored. They get a cup win. They're now 1-1. They're sitting at third in the group standings. They are trailing the Clippers and the Lakers, who have each only played one game. And then last night, the Grizzlies played well in the first half. I think maybe that was the other big story of the weekend. A team which has really struggled in first halves, played much, much better, didn't dig the big hole. But I mean, to me, like, the thing that was just kind of nice was, all right, after a week of just like heightened drama that kind of felt unnecessary, it felt like, all right, we took a breath.
Right. I mean, what would we be talking about today? A little reverse of what you talked about on Friday.
Yeah.
How the weekend could have gone, right?
Yes.
And it went the way that you would expect, where there's no reason to overreact in any direction over the weekend. So when there was no additional drama and everything's going the way that we expected, if anything, you could say actually is exceeding that, because Cedric Cowher is still like exceeding the expectations for this early in his career. So that continues to me to be what's got my attention. And that's good. It's good to come out of the weekend that's what you're thinking about, that's what you're optimistic about in the future. You know, Edie's coming back. So,
and Jaren had two good offensive nights on Friday and last night. Like, that, I think the things that the actual basketball concerns that you would have about the team was, okay, why are they struggling to get Jaren going this much? We did not see a starting lineup shakeup, but now we're at the point where Cedric is basically the only guys he trails in minutes are John Jaren.
Right.
Anything you saw in particular that you wanted to make note of? I mean, they made more shots. It obviously helped that too.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, that's even what we talked about on Friday with DeMichael was, okay, how much of this is still them trying to gel into the system a little bit more? And I think we saw a bit of a positive reaction, not just to like hitting more shots, but the actual system in general starting to work a little bit better on Friday and then into the first half against the Thunder. The second half against the Thunder was disappointing for sure, but not totally unexpected. Even a Thunder team without Lu Dort and J-Dub playing, you know, but that was a little bit more of what we expected to see. They ended up turning up the defense in the second half, doing a lot more of what we expect them to do. With Jaren in particular, I mean, we're just seeing him get to his spot a little bit more, create more of those ISO situations that we expect him to score on. I mean, it was just a poor shooting night from Ja, even though he was getting to his spots, like, no doubt.
Yeah, I didn't really know how to feel yesterday watching the game, because obviously in the first half, you kind of perk up.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. And then the third quarter, you could kind of tell, all right, this was going a certain way. And I don't know, like, this wasn't a game that I'm sitting there like, I expected them to win. Obviously, the fact that they played well in the first half was encouraging because, honestly, there have not been many halves that they've played really well against this team. And, yes, in the end, SGA has a little personal 9-0 run, and, like, that's what happens, like, when the defending MVP decides it's winning time. But
right,
I still don't think it's a fair fight yet.
No.
Like, and that's just kind of – I guess that was the whole big point for me last week, which was – I understand some things have not gone well. I did not have these expectations, though, of this team should have gotten off to like a 7-2 start, or, you know, however you want to say it. Like, they lost one game, I think, that they were favored in, which was the Miami game, and we've talked about that. Once you actually saw how Miami attacked the Grizzlies, the result was not surprising. Well, you put the two bigs and took advantage of really the fact that the Grizzlies don't have any depth inside. That was not surprising. And then other than that, like, when they've been favored, they've won the games. When they've been underdogs, they've lost. And now it's like you are going on a big, long road trip. It's like, I don't know, can you steal one of these? And I'm not even demanding it, but it's like, you know.
There are definitely winnable games, I would say. I mean, if we're looking at how some of these teams are getting off to the starts of their seasons, like, if they go on the road and they beat Boston, I mean, they did it last year.
Yep.
That wouldn't shock me. I mean, again, that's a pretty beat-up Celtics team to start the season. No Tatum. They've been okay to start their – they've talked about a team that has not shot the ball well.
Yes.
Look at the Celtics.
No, we talked about that last week when we were going through, like, the wide-open numbers. Like, they're one of the teams that's shooting even worse than the Grizzlies.
Right. And if they're able to kind of take away the good things from the game on Friday and the good things from the first half against the Thunder – I'd say there's, at the very least, one or two winnable games on this road trip.
I guess the way that I'm also looking at it is, okay, when you look at the standings, right now the Grizzlies are still in the play-in game right now at 10. The team, there's only, in my estimation, though, of the teams behind them that we expect to be better, like, the Clippers are behind them. Okay, they can jump them. But, like, do I really expect Phoenix to do this the whole year? Not really. Like, I still think we're going to get to February and March, and they're still going to be very much in that mix. Would you like to see them be better than that? Sure. But, like, as long as they are in the mix and you can get to the playoffs, or you get to the down the stretch with everybody healthy or healthy-ish, well, then you can be a situation where you're a team that might be better than your record. And, like, to me, like, that's a reasonable goal.
Absolutely. 100%.
All right, and Edie's coming back. He's going to be back possibly this week.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to get him.
On this road trip, we could see him.
Yes, George.
I was going to say,
He's made the trip, correct?
Yes, he's making the trip. He's scheduled to go on the trip. It's not like he's staying behind and playing in South Haven a game or two. He is scheduled to make the trip. That was asked, like they asked Coach Isolo that in the post game on Sunday. And he was like, yeah, he's scheduled to make the trip. So he could come back sometime this week, and that would be, I would say, a huge boon for the team.
Anybody else have a note that they want to empty from this weekend for the Grizzlies?
No, I'm just saying, I'm with you. It feels like it was a normal NBA weekend, and that
was needed.
Getting back to normal a little bit.
Just needed that. All right, the Memphis Tigers. All right, my other overreaction from the weekend. Can we all agree, no more home openers on a football Saturday at 2 p.m. on ESPN+. Because the way that I looked at it was, overall, like, I thought this was a nice win.
Yeah.
I mean, you come in, like, the point spread was a little alarmingly low because I think KenPom had the game around 78, like an 8-point game for the Tigers. Point spread I saw that came out on Saturday was Tigers by 2. They took command of the game in the first half, and even though at times, like, I think USF maybe once or twice got it down to 4, but for the most part, they just kept USF at arm's length most of the game. And, yeah, there was a bunch of lineup rotations, but it was also nice to just see, as bad as the vibe could have been, like, I thought in terms of if you're just watching the game on Saturday, it's like, all right, it's not the world. Like, doomsday's not here. And, again, some of this is context. We don't know how good or not good USF is. This is certainly not going to be the toughest of the remaining games. Like, when they go to Oxford tomorrow night, I think they're in for a much, much different class of competition. But you've got UNLV. It's like the idea of having like a disastrous non-conference, like I kind of took a sigh of relief and was like, okay, we're not staring at maybe just winning the bye games. I was also trying to figure out, okay.
All right.
Munns had mentioned there was probably some design of wanting the later start to the season after having the Arkansas and North Carolina scrimmages, kind of wanting a buffer to figure it out. Obviously, Friday night wasn't an option. The Grizzlies were at home, and then the Tigers were playing football.
Right. Couldn't have that game there.
Sunday, you had the Grizzlies scheduled. Would it not have been better to just play this game on Saturday night at 7? Was there a concert I didn't know about? But I don't think there would have been a concert, right? Because usually when you have a concert, like they're bringing in, you wouldn't have been able to play the game at 2 o'clock because they would have still had to truck in all the equipment and stuff.
Right.
I would like to know why 2 o'clock was picked. Because I'm not someone that just always wants to pick on attendance, but like you couldn't help but notice it.
Well, I mean, you couldn't help, I mean, not be surprised. I mean, you
right.
Were
I'm not.
Surprised?
I'm not blaming anyone. That's what I'm saying. Like, this just felt like not the right schedule, like not the right time picked to schedule the home opener.
No, but I mean, that's also just kind of a well, you've got a problem with college basketball is that it's gonna at this point. You've got so much going on, right? You've got so much going on. We just talked about it with baseball trying to position themselves where they were the most relevant thing going on. And for Tiger basketball, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the attendance is showing it. They are there was at some point, you know, a debate when Calipari was here of, like, which team matters the most to the city, the Grizzlies or the Tigers. But, like, the Grizzlies are the obvious team that matters on a daily basis to most Memphians. And so the Tiger basketball team is in that position like baseball is really like, how do I, where most of our fans are fans from a different generation. They're older fans who have a connection to us from a bygone era. And then not that old, but like, how do we recapture and position ourselves as the most important thing? And put yourself 2 o'clock on a Saturday. It at least was like, it was great for Tiger fans as far as like you needed something to uplift you after the night before.
Yeah.
And if you are a diehard Tiger fan, then yes, that spot ended up working out for you. Whether or not you went to the game or found it on ESPN Plus is another story, right? But
that was tough. I think the schedule, full screen.
The scheduling is bad, but can we just take a moment and look at what we've got coming up here over the next 10 days? For the basketball team, I mean, it couldn't be. I mean, could you ask for more exciting opponents? And we'll see how they end up. But like you're talking, they're in Oxford tomorrow night. That regional game, that rivalry that should take place in football and basketball every single year still takes place in basketball, happening at whatever we call the Tad Pad now. What is it?
The Pavilion.
And then we've got. I just know they got Raising Cane's
RIP,
at their concession.
RIP. I think they're going to play their last Tad Pad game this week.
That's correct. They already have plans to tear down the Tad Pad.
Which still makes no sense to me.
Put the hockey team there.
My whole time down there covering the team, it was like, can we get rid of this thing? And now it's like, let's play these nostalgia games. And it's like...
It's quick. It can turn around quick. So yeah, so you got Ole Miss tomorrow night.
Right.
An 8 p.m. Tip. I don't like those 8 p.m. stars, especially after Friday now. And then we've got UNLV, the pass to return on Sunday. And then... a week from Thursday, Purdue.
To the Bahamas. To the Bahamas we go.
And I see a number next to Purdue's name that looks pretty impressive.
They did get dropped.
They did get dropped.
Houston passed them in the AP poll. I don't know. Are they still in the coaches? Are they still one in the coaches?
It's an impressive number, and it will be an impressive number when they play next week, even if they drop.
That will be quite the contest.
Purdue is still one in the coaches poll. Yeah, it's still one Purdue to Houston.
But can you ask for a better 10 days? Like, if college basketball is interesting, this is a great 7 days of play your regional rival, play your former coach,
yep.
Play the number one team in the country. That's all happening. It's going to happen almost within a 7 day span. It's going to be like 9 day span that Memphis is going to have those three games before. We still got other great games coming up after that. Look, I'm happy with this. This is a non-conference schedule. You know, you can't complain about that. Of all the complaints about scheduling, this is a fun non-conference again this year with Baylor and Louisville and Vandy and Mississippi State all still to come.
I'm not, like, nitpicking here, but has Houston done anything to for sure be the number one team? Like, you beat Lehigh and Towson, I guess, is the difference that Purdue had, like, didn't Purdue kind of have an ugly game last week against Oakland?
Yeah, they only won that game by 10.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's so early. It's
the, whatever.
It's the first AP poll since the preseason poll.
After Purdue loses to Memphis, there will be no question Houston should be the top team.
There you go.
if you're also following along from the transitive property of scrimmages or exhibitions, Arkansas went to Michigan State, got beat by 3, a competitive game, kind of back and forth. I don't feel like really either team controlled much of that. They had a chance to tie a couple times, didn't get great looks, but I also, the other team gets to play defense too.
It's an Izzo team.
Yeah, the only thing I was thinking is maybe it's Izzo in November. Like, I don't know, necessarily know if like it's quite as threatening, but like, I don't know. They looked like two.
He still cooks up a defense, though.
They looked like two very good basketball teams when I was watching them.
Right.
And then I did not follow along. Auburn bounced back from Merrimack, I think. Or they bounced back with Merrimack from the Bethune-Cookman overtime.
The St. John's Alabama game was pretty electric.
Yes, I believe. What was Patino's quote? Like, I've never seen a defensive performance that bad, and we just elected a communist in this city. I think that was his take.
That sounds like something Patino would throw
it was
out
like
there.
One of those ones where like he wanted to like heavy-handedly work in the mayor race, but it's like didn't quite nail it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, then yeah.
Let's see. That was the worst effing defensive performance I've ever witnessed in New York City, and we just let a communist, take over City Hall this week.
Oh, so we're playing defense against the communists.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, there we go. Let's go with college football playoff. All right, so this broke kind of Friday afternoon, and this is actually one of those stories that I kind of take as a good thing, but I want y'all's thoughts on it as well. Mississippi State President Mark Keenum, who heads the College Football Playoff Oversight Committee, said Friday that he's not optimistic about the CFP expanding from 12 to 16 teams next season and that the SEC would prefer a model with no automatic qualifiers. In an interview on the Paul Feinbaum show on Mississippi State's campus, Keenum acknowledged, without giving specifics, that the expansion talks among the conferences have reached an impasse. Quote, I'm not very optimistic that we'll get into it, but we'll keep working. I'm cool with this. Like, I don't need this rush for 16. I really like the format with 12. I think 12's way better than 4. It feels like it's a significant accomplishment if you were able to make it, but it also doesn't feel like we're just letting in a bunch of teams that don't really need to be there. I didn't feel like in 12-team playoff, we left out anyone that was going to win a national title. Like, it's working. Why not just, like, kind of stick with it? And I know the answer is, well, we're leaving money on the table.
Well, yeah, that would be the number one. I'm excited about it too. I like the 12. It's been very fun, and obviously from a Memphis perspective, it's been fun up until a point every single year. And you look at the top 25, like the teams that are going to be left out, whether you know ends up being BYU. I'm watching Saturday. I'm like, here goes BYU playing their way out of this, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they're possibly going to do, and they're not going to deserve it. And you have Vanderbilt is either going to be in or they're not, right? They have a chance to get in.
Yeah,
then they don't. Like, you look at these teams that are towards the bottom, and we'll see the updated rankings tomorrow night, as we didn't dedicate a segment to it today, obviously, for those tuning in, because Memphis is out and bracketology is over, as far as I'm concerned, until they're battling back in. But yeah, I love the 12. I think it's great. And I do see, like, when you're having, I think you see the buys and the TV people are like, well, why is there not a game here? You know, but the 16 isn't really going to change that. So who knows what number they could end up going.
It just feels like with 16, they're going to start like really manipulating the, like,
there could be like double buys and whatnot. I'm just like, oh my God, this thing is clean. Like,
because what we were able to do and what we're experiencing, we've been experiencing since it went to 12, is, which is just last year, that the sense of urgency and the live or die by a win element of college football is still there, and it's just expanded. It has expanded to more teams. And I think you do risk getting to 16 or more, that is less important when you can have three losses and get in. Because it's going to be very easy for SEC teams with three losses to get in once you hit 16, and that's why they want it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't necessarily know if the SEC wants it. I think it's more of like...
That's why other conferences want...
Yes, there's no question that's why...
Some of the conferences are interested in it.
Correct.
You don't think the SEC want... I mean, we'll see how it shakes up this year. They want a change because they didn't like last year.
Yeah, I think if the SEC... If it goes the way that it's looking like right now, if the SEC gets five in, I don't think you'll see the mad rush to change the format again. And I think that's a big part of it. It's like the Big Ten wants things to be different, but the SEC's like, we're kind of okay right now. Like, let's see how it goes. Now, you watch another SMU get in ahead of, like, have 9-4 Duke get in. Then yeah,
you do like Notre Dame is going to like just have an automatic bid every year if they get to 16, right? Like this year, at least it's debatable. They could fall like Notre Dame. Like if there's 16 teams, there's no debate that Notre Dame's probably getting in every year, and they have to have a pretty awful season. But you have Oklahoma hanging out at the end, Utah, Virginia, Louisville played themselves out last weekend. So I'm not. Yeah, there's no reason to expand to 16. But these were your 13, 14. Utah, Virginia, Louisville, and Vandy were last week's 13 through 16, and it's like, okay, yeah, if they're good enough, they'll play their way up to the 12.
Robert Irwin Jewelers is having their famous Give Gifts That Get Gifts sale, and it's going on now through Saturday, and that means that if you spend $1,999 or more on anything at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you'll receive a free Yeti Roadie 24 hard cooler, or you can take an additional 10% off any already on sale diamond pendants and necklaces. Robert Irwin Jewelers is where we bought my wife's engagement rings. It's, of course, one of the most nerve-wracking processes you can possibly go through, especially for someone like me that didn't really know a whole lot about the jewelry world, but I cannot recommend the experience at Robert Irwin Jewelers enough. I went in, worked with Howie. I showed him about two or three pictures of concepts that my wife liked, and then we went and we put together an engagement ring, customized engagement ring. No one else ever won it before, and we've even added on to it for my wife. Like, she absolutely loves it. I occasionally catch her looking down at how much she loves a ring, and that's pretty much all you're looking for in this type of purchase. You want to make sure that you did it right. So again, now through Saturday, spend $1,999 or more on anything at Robert Irwin Jewelers and receive a free Yeti Roadie 24 hard cooler, or you can take an additional 10% off already on sale diamond pendants and necklaces. Robert Irwin Jewelers, bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. You can shop at the three locations locally. There's the Bartlett Town Center in Bartlett near the Kroger, the South Haven one right at the corner of Airways and Goodman Road, or the Diamond Showroom right there on South Perkins near Laurelwood. As always, you can shop online at rijewelers.com. When we come back, CJ Hurt joins the program next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. CJ Hurt is a Grind City Media personality. You can see him each and every weekday on the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt. Follow him on all socials at ConRadicalness. CJ, are things back to normal with the Grizzlies?
What is normal?
I don't know. We were talking about how it was kind of, I don't know if you want to say maybe this is depressing, but it was refreshing to just have a normal weekend. Like, on Friday night, they played a team that they should have beaten. They outplayed them, and it was moving on. Last night, like, yes, it was maybe you're like talking yourself into at halftime, like maybe, I don't know, maybe this could be a big upset, but like, I don't know. It was just nice to kind of have a normal, the results went the way that you thought kind of weekend of NBA basketball without having to sit here and like read body language the whole time.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I think everything is, I think everybody is on the same page, but I don't like the way that sounds. I think everybody knows what their job is.
Yeah.
Everybody knows now what is expected of them going forward. And everybody understands this is what it's going to be this year. And this is what it's going to be for the foreseeable future. So, yeah. And if that's what you mean by normal, then, yeah, it is good that they are back to that. And now we can focus on the things that we need to be focusing on. Right. Like now we can focus on, OK, how are all these pieces fitting together? And we can focus on things of that nature, not like you said, what this dude's body language is or is not saying about the team, the coaching staff, front office and all of that. So, yeah, it's good that they're back like that.
Yeah, like that's it. It's like now you can focus on, like, let's start get some pieces back together. Like, no, let's get some, you know, get some guys healthy, like returning to the lineup and whatnot. But I think really the other big reason for optimism is, you know, you never want to put like unnecessary expectations on a young man, but it is like one of the biggest bright spots of this entire season so far is the start of Cedric Coward, like, has gone just about as well as you could have hoped for.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And I'm a bit of a skeptic on Coward because like I didn't see him play a whole lot of competitive basketball against some of the better basketball players in college. By the time he gets to Washington State, he's out. He played six games against subpar competition, and then he's out. People have pointed out to me when I bring that up, like, you know, Duke wanted him, and Duke's not just taking anybody. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, that's great, but even ACC basketball is like really, really small when you think about the talent that the NBA has, comparatively speaking.
For sure.
Not necessarily in size, but just in the amount of talent and what that talent is capable of.
To your point,
he's been out here playing really, really well the first 11 games of the season.
To your point, like, I was thinking about this. Patrick Queen last year when he was at Maryland, and I get it, it's the Big Ten, it's not the ACC anymore. But Patrick Queen, when you were watching him in college, looked like an absolute monster. And the first thing that stood out to me on opening night here in Memphis was when you saw Patrick Queen, it's like he just kind of looked like another dude on the Pelicans. I'm not saying like anything about the way that he played. I'm just saying in terms of his stature, you're like, he just looked like another dude. And you're like, man, the whole time last year, I'm just thinking like, that guy's a monster.
Yeah. Yeah. So my thought was it would take Coward a while to adjust to the athleticism, the speed, and what was being asked and required of him. And it's still, he's still adjusting to it, sure, but if this is what he looks like as he adjusts to the game and to life in the NBA, man, the proverbial sky's the limit for what he's capable of. I'm pretty sure he's easily been the best wing on this roster, and I feel like it's a matter of time, sooner rather than later, we'll be looking up and he'll be in the starting lineup.
What else kind of struck you from this weekend?
Listen, man, for so much of the injury woes have centered around Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And for both of them to have played, correct me if I'm wrong, every game?
Yep.
Every game so far this season, 11 straight games, that's huge to me. That is the thing that stood out the most to me. Ja out there on the court, I don't think he's 100%, but it's 11 games in. You're going to have nicks and bruises and aches, but he's still out there playing. And that's huge because I don't think in years past he would have been on the court Sunday. He might have been on the court Saturday. I don't think he would have been on the court Sunday. And that's big because that's a team right there. There's a new system in place, sure, but when the game is on the line, call 12. And we say that for a reason. And as long as he's out there, I know he's struggling with a shot. I know he's struggling to try and see where he's supposed to be on the court, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. I understand that. But as long as he's on the court and engaged, and he looked pretty engaged this weekend, he gives you a chance to win games.
What did you get from this weekend from outside of the NBA, from the Tiger basketball or Tiger football? You got any thoughts on those?
We talked, Jeffrey. You weren't here. You was out balling on vacation, I do believe. But Kevin, you and I talked after the UAB loss.
Yes.
We said, hey, the rest of the season, we can find out some things if this Tigers football program goes on, wins out, and goes to the American Championship game, wins that, finds their way into the CFP, we know some things. But if they lose at all on this journey, then we also know some things. And unfortunately, it happened against Tulane over the weekend. And that's a game that the Tigers, and I don't want to be like, should have won, but dang, they could have won that. They had a couple of just big plays on blown assignments and poor positioning early in that game in the first half. And then in the second half, whatever Ryan Silverfield said to him, whatever adjustments were made in that locker room in the second half, they held Tulane to just 3 points. You know, so it's one of those frustrating things where it's like, oh, it was right there. Everything was still right there. Even with the bad UAB loss, it was all right there for you. And for them to let it slip through their fingertips the way that they did, man, that was disheartening. Other things that stood out to me, Indiana. I think Indiana is pretty good. I understand they beat a Penn State team who record-wise isn't good, but Indiana had never won at Penn State. And for them to go out there and win the way that they did, coming off after a huge turnover, Penn State goes down the field, gets a touchdown, minute and a half or so left in the game. He's like, oh, Indiana's got to go to the length of the field, and they got to get a touchdown, not a field goal. They got to get a touchdown. For them to be able to do that, that's still so much talent and so much pride on that Penn State team. And for the Indiana to go out there and get the win the way that they got it, man, I was thoroughly impressed by them.
What'd you make of Oregon having to go to Iowa and kind of survive getting Iowa? You know what I mean?
Welcome to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Welcome. You guys have no idea. You guys think Iowa and the rest of these teams in the Big Ten are garbage and trash just because it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Let me be clear. You're right. But, you go up into Kinnick Stadium and you any damn good, that's the type of game you get. I can't tell you how many good Big Ten teams I've seen, how many offensively explosive Big Ten teams I've seen go into that stadium and look like they didn't know what the hell they were doing, going to that stadium and struggle to get first downs. Oregon was averaging, 38 points a game, almost 40 points per game? And then they go in there and they can only get 18? Yeah, welcome. That's one of your welcome to the Big Ten moments right there, man. Going into Kinnick Stadium and being good, being explosive, and then looking around like, yo, what the hell are we doing? Why can we not beat this team right here? Yeah, welcome. But Oregon did come away with the win. And impressed by them as well.
Yeah, I'm with you in the sense that, like, I think a lot of teams would have lost. You know what I mean? Like, because Iowa puts together that long drive that, honestly, I didn't know if Iowa could do it. Hey, they got to go the length of the field, and they converted some big third downs. I think they even had a fourth down conversion in there. They end up not getting the two-point conversion after they initially called it good. But, man, the throw that Dante Moore made to set up the field goal, it's like, that's as big time of a throw as we've seen all year. Like, I know it's not going to get the accolades as the Indiana catch, and we all get that, but, like, that was a really, really impressive throw given the moment. Like, the weather's terrible. Like, you're going up against a team that just, you know, just sucks to play against. They make everything feel just like a root canal. And, like, I don't know, man. Like, I left feeling a little bit more impressed by Oregon than I have the last couple of weeks.
The whole weekend, right?
Yeah.
Because what Indiana was able to do, that's the one loss we've seen with Oregon this whole season, and then how they pulled it off. Like, Oregon's got it. Once again, going into these playoffs, looks like Oregon's got a chance. I guess, well, maybe we're going to get to the conference championship games to really help us. But they're moving on up as BYU's moving on down in those rankings.
Oh, yeah. Texas Tech, best football team money can buy. The way that they've gone out there and handled the better teams in that conference, it's you know, $7 million spent on the defensive line itself. They got a star in the secondary. Why am I blanking on his name? I think it's Jacob Rodriguez.
Yeah, he's like a linebacker. Like, he's like one of those like linebackers that also kind of plays like strong safety, but he gets a bunch of picks. Like, he's just kind of all over the place.
yeah, that's somebody who I expect to be invited on whatever day they do the award ceremony for the Jim Thorpe Award, right? Like, they've got, it's more than just that offense. That defense is pretty good as well. And, like, they've got to win the Big 12 to get in. I can't imagine a Texas Tech team that loses the Big 12 gets in, not when you've got a team like Texas and teams like Oklahoma also sitting right there. Throw Notre Dame.
Hey, why, into that whoa. Well. Do not throw Notre Dame into that mix. I know they might get in, but I mean, come on, Notre Dame. Look at the resume of Notre Dame. It's unimpressive. I know they beat the devil out of Navy over the weekend. That's great. Doing that right before Veterans Day. Shout out to you, Notre Dame. But
Goodelson sent the NFL to Germany.
Look, seven wins. They've got 7 wins, right? Very impressive. But 3 of their 7 wins, CJ, have come against teams that are in last place in their conference. They beat the last place team in the ACC. They beat the last place team in the Big Ten. They beat the last place team in the SEC. I'm talking about Boston College, Purdue, Arkansas. They beat teams that are combined like 0-18 in league play. They haven't done any. They have zero impressive wins on their resume. Most impressive thing is what happened this past Saturday against Navy. And like, it's like the idea that BYU possibly, when the rankings come out tomorrow, they're going to be ranked below Notre Dame, a 6-2 Notre Dame, it's absurd. Notre Dame hasn't done anything except wear the name Notre Dame on their jersey this year. That's all they've done. And they've lost to good teams, which, congratulations. Everybody loses to good teams.
I mean, listen, I think that Notre Dame has done a bit more than nothing. Kevin, I don't know why we keep bickering about Notre Dame. You're trying to turn me into a Notre Dame fan. They've got the 3-point loss to Miami and the 1-point loss against
Texas.
Against Texas A&M.
They've got losses. Right?
But they've got losses.
And they got wins against teams that have nothing but losses.
Well, who's BYU beat? What team is BYU played them beat?
Oh, I'm just using BYU as the example for the week, but they're going to have it. They're going to be 8-1. They were undefeated up until this past week.
We're talking about BYU and Notre Dame here.
I'm talking about Notre Dame in general.
Dame and who? It can't just be Notre Dame and in general. You got to give me Notre Dame and who.
Texas has 2 losses.
Do you think Oklahoma should be in over Notre Dame?
I would say yes, Texas and Oklahoma at the moment, yes. And what about Virginia?
What about Virginia?
Especially if they're on the backup quarterback.
Well, look,
I'm
looking at the resume, and until this weekend, like Louisville, I just say Notre Dame has done nothing.
And Louisville.
Until this past weekend, I was saying Louisville, but how about Vanderbilt though? That's a real one. How about Vandy?
How about Georgia Tech? Vandy, Notre Dame and Vandy could be interesting. I would still pick Notre Dame in, but I wouldn't be mad at you if you add somebody else in.
I'm putting the brakes on the idea that Notre Dame has done anything this year. They have not done anything. They've lost to good teams, which everybody does, and everybody they've beaten, not only is bad, but the worst of the conferences that they've beaten. They want to be an independent, and they're not in a conference. If they were in a conference, the teams they were playing are the worst teams in every conference. That's who they beat, the worst teams in every conference. And then they lost to the good teams from the conferences. They lost to them. You got to win something, CJ. You got to win something.
As Herm told us, CJ, you play to win the game.
And they won the game. They won 7 of them. What are we talking about here?
I did not realize Notre Dame was such a sore spot for Kevin until this year.
I didn't know it either until a couple of weeks ago when he got mad at me about it.
I mean, it was an off-air conversation with me and CJ. Yeah, we were texting back and forth. It was not pretty.
Notre Dame beat USC.
I think it was the week I had to miss this show, and I wasn't here to go. Like, the idea that
I think you bring up an interesting one. If Vandy gets to 10-2, so they would have Kentucky and Tennessee left. I would be curious to know if there's one spot left. Would that be enough to pass Vandy over Notre Dame? My guess says no, but I do think that's where you could actually say, well, there's a legitimate gripe here.
Well, there's going to be an interesting clog down there. We're talking about Oregon, how impressive they were. They could have another loss by the end of the year, and they will also have the same record as Notre Dame, right? But BYU's gonna, I would probably, they would fall out. I don't think they're deserving, but It's same thing could happen to Ole Miss. Same thing could happen to Georgia, even Alabama at this point, where they could have a very similar record to Notre Dame. And who's going to get the – Notre Dame has just got – is this a sweet spot bias? They've got the help that they get to be hanging around in a high-ranked spot all year without doing anything. They haven't done anything. They haven't done anything, CJ. Nothing.
All right, CJ, we're going to take a break because Kevin's got to move his car.
Yeah, I got to move my car.
All right, y'all.
All right, that is CJ Hurt of Grind City Media. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 99 FM, ESPN.
All right, boys, today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. This was a George submission. The Pitt Panthers are taking center stage against Notre Dame with ESPN's College Game Day in town next weekend. It's a game that has begun to develop a must-win narrative for both sides. However, Pitt coach Pat Narduzzi doesn't see it that way. At his recent press conference today, Narduzzi actually pushed back, giving a pretty hilarious response to the must-win narrative. Instead, he insisted that it's more important for the Panthers to win their ACC games coming home in the final stretch. Absolutely not. It's not an ACC game. I'm glad you brought that up. It's not an ACC game. I'd gladly get beat 103 or 110 to 10 in that game. They could put 100 up on us as long as we win the next two after that.
Pitt with a shot at the playoffs, right? But not. Yes. You know, this is a game that's going to decide that whether or not they're going to make it to the playoffs.
Pitt plays Miami and Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So Pitt could end up being a data point for your beloved Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Yes. It could be. It could be their most impressive win, without a doubt.
LSC's still out there.
They hadn't beaten anybody. Well, that's true. I mean they're 19. That's true. They're 19.
Listen, nobody's beaten anybody. I think you can always make that argument.
Oh, no, people have beaten people. They beat them. It's just the good losses are fine, but you got to have some good wins.
You don't want the best resume point to be, we played this team close. I think that's a fair stance to take. I don't think that's unreasonable. My thanks to CJ Hurt for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Kevin, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.